Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 316. My name is Kevin. On the other end, as per usual, Mr. Christopher Calamita. How you doing, sir?
I am doing really good, Kevin. I just got done watching what was... I used the word riveting episode of Tough Talk, and that is not hyperbole. That was some pretty amazing television, and just when I thought it had peaked with the complete dismantling of ZZ, the word ring rat then makes its WWE television debut.
Yeah, I was surprised that they felt the need to have that explained, to be completely honest with you. That word rat is used in conjunction with any number of sports, let's say. And I knew several people that were called rink rats.
Really?
Who like to hang out with the Blue Jackets. So, you know, ice rink, you know, just a little different terminology, but still same thing.
Yeah, I've actually only ever heard the word rat associated with wrestling, but obviously I will take your word on it and on all hockey knowledge. But yeah, that was just quite the thing to just blurt out there. I mean, in this day and age, I don't know if, you know, let's just, like, call it what it was. Slut shaming is the right way to go about things. Altered it. I think there's a, you know, if Sarah Lee does hang out with any of the NXT guys in her spare time, that's her decision. So, and she's an adult, it's her life. So, yeah, it's a tactic that may backfire for Amanda, not that her chances of winning the popular vote next week were all that great to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, they continue in some weird ways to still, dismiss the fans.
Yeah, they absolutely do, and this whole process has been, to a certain degree, we definitely call it a failure. it should have been, there should have been a be-all, end-all host, whose name should have been Steve Austin, but you know, that's not how things were. Although,
well,
Jericho would have been, you know, perfectly fine in that role as a 25-year veteran and a former multiple-time world champion.
Yeah, I think as much as I like Renee Young, I don't know why she's in there. Like, she causes more problems. Just, like, that second person in general causes more problems than necessary.
I don't feel like she does enough to cause problems. She's kind of just
Well, that's why it's weird. Like, she's just kind of, like, hanging out. I guess that's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
They feed her one line, like, every blue moon. Or she gets to laugh at Jericho's joke and, like, segue into something else.
Right.
And I think, yeah, she is almost used so little that it's awkward to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and I love Renee and just about everything else that every other role she has in this company. But in this one, she is essentially, like, an accessory on Chris Jericho's arm. It's just kind of weird that, you know, she's even there. You know, they go through the expense of, you know, instead of sending her to SmackDown, sending her to Orlando with, you know, after Raws, and just having her be there for no reason. It's kind of silly, but I guess a lot of the way this season has been set up has been kind of silly.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like they're trying to almost go e-entertainment kind of hosts kind of vibe.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, and I don't think that this show needed that. I mean, I mean, the faults of the show from the beginning were that, you know, there was that expert presence, you know, being the final judge and jury of who goes home from week to week, and the selection process also hurt in the fact that they made it about $250,000, and not just the opportunity to be a WWE superstar. That does bring out the glory hounds, and not the people who seriously, you know, want this.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's, and I mean, I think that just the show in general kind of showed how early on in their development all these wrestlers are at. Like, because the whole episode was about finding a finisher for somebody, and they're like, no, powerbomb, Josh, nope, not happening yet, pal.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's the other thing that I guess it definitely was dawning on me, but I would have to think that would dawn on the rest of the audience how complex it is at that point.
Right, yeah, it absolutely is. And no, you cannot make a good wrestler in 10 weeks. But of course, the person that wins that contract, I don't remember how much money it's for, should obviously have something, be good at what the basic stuff that they've shown you in the beginning, you know, from day one, and have the potential to be worth $250,000, you know, or however much, you know, they'll be paid. And I do think that on the girls' end, if you really look at it as, like, the opportunity, the amount of money, neither of them deserve it. Meanwhile, on the guy's end, you can see that Josh does have the most potential, and he is taking over ZZ in the voting. And I think if that burial, if any part of that burial of ZZ from Tough Talk had aired on Tough Enough, you might have gone home. I mean, that was brutal stuff. I mean, and I assume that it's all true, and he had no defense of himself. He really could not. It was too much for him. It was too much for him to even, you know, if he is in some ways psychologically smarter than people might give him credit for, and he has, you know, manipulated his way through this with a simple country bumpkin act that is an act. It was exposed tonight. It was exposed on Top Talk.
Yeah, that was it. I was glad, like, I barely watched the show. I probably caught about 15 or 20 minutes of the actual show, and then I turned on Tough Talk and had it on in the background. And I was completely fine with that arrangement.
Right.
Because Tough Talk really did, I mean, it's kind of weird not to say that stuff.
Yeah, and Brian even said that, like, he held back on the show, and it was just kind of weird, and that he could have used his save for Tanner.
But he didn't.
Brian, you know, I didn't realize that Brian, you know, I guess he's got maybe not much better to do with his time now, so he spent the whole day yesterday at the Performance Center, and he saw all these things about ZZ being lazy, and hey, like, he liked Tanner so much, he probably should have used his save there, and then ZZ would have gone home. But he held back so much, and once again, you know, Tanner and his lack of facial emotion, facial emoting, you know, was all that was on display, and that sent him home.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really changed the theme of any of these people's personas, really.
Right.
Josh has maybe come out a little bit more as a personality. But the kind of context of the essence of them hasn't changed at all.
No, not at all. Not really. But you know, at that point, it is who they are. So, you know, obviously, you know, they're gonna grow to whatever degree that they're gonna grow. But you know, they brought, you know, unless you're completely playing an act to win the whole thing, you're not gonna change that much in 10 weeks. You're just gonna, you know, grow in whatever way that you're gonna grow. And I think Josh has shown the most growth. I would say he was kind of, you know, even though he's the biggest guy, he was in the background for the first almost half of the run of the show, and then had just kind of became the co-front runner over the last few weeks, and then tonight he won the vote. It was still less than 10 percentage points between him and
but
CC,
it was still like still, 8 or something like that. It was a pretty big gap.
It was a decent sized gap. Obviously, if Brian had used his save on Tanner, the, you know, ZZ would have gone home. But you know, Josh not only closed the gap on ZZ, he has surpassed it. That was the second time, I believe, he did in the end, when he was put in the bottom three and did do better than ZZ. So that's why I said I was not going to do any silly, you know, bets on, you know, whether I was going to win it on the men's side. And I do think that there's more. Tanner could have survived his way through last week, through this week, especially if Brian used a save, but there was no way he was going to beat either of them in the vote next week.
Oh.
So, I mean,
right.
And who knows if Brian was manipulated in some way not to use his save on Tanner, you know, behind the scenes.
Either that or he's thinking to himself, this is better TV. Like, he knows that Tanner wasn't going to win the final two, and there was more of a foregone conclusion. If you leave ZZ in there, there's at least some level of doubt
as to who wins. There's going to be some drama. I mean, the live match concept is going to be very, very interesting to see. And they didn't completely specify whether it was they're going to be wrestling each other or if they're going to each bring. They're gonna each have an individual match with an NXT pro. You know, a regular member of the NXT, you know.
Yeah, Jason Jordan has been making a whole lot of appearances as the dummy on the men's side.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised that they used Dana Brooke in that role, because she's only less than 6 months in herself. Granted, maybe there wasn't anyone, you know, available that day. I guess with Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky Lynch on the main roster, I guess Bayley wasn't available that day, or they figured she's too big of a star to use in this role. So,
yeah,
but
something like that.
Lines, but so the day
could have been
that,
Blue Pants.
Right. Yeah, I imagine it's going to be live matches against each other, which. That would, if they want, I mean, I kind of made the point in our group, was like, if they want ZZ and Sarah to fall flat on their faces on live TV and lose the vote, that might be, you know, that might be the only thing that's okay. That men's the men's vote is going to be a dead. Pretty much a dead heat to the very end, I think. But that women's vote's gonna be a demolition unless Sarah just completely fails and just falls flat on her face on live TV.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't know if they've really given us enough to know one way or the other. But Daniel Bryan at least seemed to think that Sarah Lee was putting in the work in the gym to keep herself in good shape. So she's at least trying, I would suppose. But who knows? Like, I don't know if that... and I can't even think of what her... Andrea?
Amanda?
Amanda. Yeah, see, that's how much of an impression she's made on me. Like, I guess I still don't know anything, even though they have kind of painted her again, like, she's had the whole bitchy story arc with her the whole time. So, she's still playing that part.
Right, and tonight she basically admitted that she's just playing a part, which, I don't know if I would have done that. I think I would have doubled down on the bitch factor and made it, and just made yourself and herself the heel of this competition.
Yeah, it would have been one of the few things to help her out, but she chose not to go that route for whatever reason.
No, she didn't, and that she athletically, she is definitely better than Sam. But it's not like there's any qualities in her that I think that would be missing out on if she doesn't win this and it's never, you know, and she never ends up, you know, in developmental or even or following through on, you know, in wrestling. Not that Sarah Lee has those, seems to have those qualities either, but
yeah, I mean I think that's what it really goes back to, and we've said it a couple of times. Sarah Lee, neither of the women are really anything special. Josh, you can see some potential, and that's really about it out of this show.
Yeah.
And it is still like we've said too for a while that it's just too early in their development, so you know it's gonna be a while.
Right. I mean, but you know the other versions of Tough Enough have all you know been 2 or 3 months worth, you know, 10-12 weeks. You know, on seasons, and you know, with you know, just months of development for at least the people who are starting from scratch. So, but I guess on this one, the live to tape element, you know, comes to play, and that you know, this everything that happened literally on tonight's show literally happened in the last week. It's not, you know, put together, you know, months later. So that I think that element puts you know the warts and all, you know, out there more than, you know, a very very very, you know, pre-produced and edited reality show like in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they have enough time to me to make those types of edits, or at least a lot of them. Depending upon, because they never really say what day of the week everything is. So, you know, aside from obviously Tuesday being the show day.
Right.
You know, they don't really say, oh, this was Sunday's workout, and this was Monday's workout, and this was Tuesday's workout. You know, you're just kind of left to kind of guess.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot, well, and there's just a lot of time in there that you don't see.
Yeah. Apparently, according to Tough Talk, there's a lot we haven't seen, and if they did show that, it would have put ZZ in such a bad light that I don't know if we could. I don't know what percentage of the voting audience, you know, watches Tough Talk, but after that, I don't know how anyone could possibly vote for ZZ unless they were just purposely trying to screw this whole process up.
Which, I guess if that's the route you're going, I always have some weird appreciation for it. Yeah. Well, Tough Enough has gotten a bad rap, which is fine, because the WWE, in my humble opinion, is doing a fine job on their hype for both SummerSlam and for the NXT TakeOver the night before.
Oh yeah, this is a pretty big weekend. Oh man, unfortunately, I won't be able to watch any of it live. I will be in Chicago for Comic-Con this whole weekend, so I'll be avoiding spoilers Saturday night and Sunday night.
Oh, that is tough.
That will be tough, but it will hopefully be done. But yeah, they've done a great job. This is, let's go with SummerSlam first. They have done everything they can do to make this almost like a second WrestleMania. They've promoted it, very well. They've got a bigger match really than anything that was on WrestleMania. All things considered, I mean, WrestleMania as a spectacle really can't be beat. But having the big match and promoting it, as the big match, they have done just a great job. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, even well, let's start with the big match. And talk about someone who's just to me turned completely unlikable. One Mr. Undertaker just comes out and gives the old cheap shot to the balls again.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think that's got to be the first time he's been booed in well over a decade. That would date back to when he went on a heel run when he was Biker Taker. That's how long it's been.
Yeah, it's Corporate Taker is even older than that.
Right. Yeah. That was very interesting. I mean, I guess they knew they were in Minneapolis. They were in Brock's hometown, and it was not going to be it was going to be a Lesnar crowd. So they went for it, and it was certainly an interesting way to end the show. It gave me thought that Brock is going to win this one, but he might not. I don't know. Because that's kind of just the way they do things with the person who's standing tall on the last Raw is the one who ends up losing the match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just don't see the point of having Taker win at this juncture. Like, man, he looks really old. Like, I understand that he is pretty damn old. So he looks great for his age. But I'm just saying, he's still his age.
Right, yeah.
And Lesnar, is no spring chicken himself at this juncture. But he still looks enough the junior of Undertaker that it just doesn't even seem like a fair match.
That's why you gotta kick the guy in the nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand that, and not sure Taker's ever been the best at conveying these things. So we're gonna have to do with what he's actually doing.
Right. It's definitely a different, take on Undertaker as an older, bitter veteran who needs this win. I mean, if that's the story that they're going with, then Brock probably should win this match so that they could come back around again at WrestleMania, and that's the story. Undertaker has to beat this man before he retires.
Right. Yeah, Jeremy and I were talking about that possibility earlier today. And if that's the way they're going, hey, it's Dallas. He's a Texas guy. So it wouldn't be entirely surprising. Like, I feel like people have mentioned this as a possibility for his last match for a while, honestly. Or at least I've heard it floated.
Yeah, it's it was floated before the rumors started flying that he was even going to be, you know, brought back for the summer at all. But I don't know if it was the first time I
honestly feel like I had heard something pretty much the moment they said they're going to be in Dallas. That in a Steve Austin match, of course.
Well, that second one's not happening, so...
No, it is not.
So they... I mean, I think that the idea has been for a while that no matter who wins against Undertaker's last match, and it would be billed as his last match, I think that'd be the way to go. No, you know, if he loses, he retires thing. You know, it's just, you know, win or lose, this is it. I think that's the way it should be billed. No matter who it's against, even if it's not against Lesnar. I mean, it would be one of the big...
Oh, come on, spit it out, son!
I mean, no matter who Undertaker's, you know, last match is against at WrestleMania in Dallas, you know, it'll be one of the big matches on the show, one of the featured... main events on the show, so, and if they do it against him and Brock, I think that would be pretty huge. I mean, of course, what happens on Sunday plays a huge role in whether that can happen, because, you know, they're not going to have the quote unquote luxury they had at WrestleMania 30, where, you know, there was another big match to come to close the show and send people home happy. If it's not a good match. Sunday, this is it. I mean, if Undertaker is not able to, you know, go toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar and have the type of match that, you know, the tone was set with that brawl, you know, in having, then I don't know if you go with it again.
Yeah, that will be kind of an interesting thing to see. Because as much... is they've also done a good job of building John Cena versus Seth Rollins. I think just by time positioning, you know, Brock and Taker was the main event of the show.
Oh yeah.
You know, that is usually the main event also of the pay-per-view.
Oh yeah.
I
mean, Brock and Taker is the main event. It is what the show is being sold on. I mean, Rollins and Cena is a solid number two, and will be a great match in its own right, and possibly the better match of the two. But no, this is about, you know, the big match and what's been presented as, you know, bigger than pretty much anything else they've done in a pretty long time.
Right. Yeah, it is certainly that is the highlight. And I guess I wouldn't mind moving on to some of the other stuff. I'm actually kind of excited to see the Seth Rollins versus John Cena match now.
Yeah, I really am. That was a great promo from John Cena. And yes, they finally brought up the 16th title reign. Because over the last year, you know, while Brock was a champion, you know, Cena had his title shots. But they never brought up the 16th because it would be setting him up for failure. But this time they have brought it up, so it does, you know, at least psychologically implant that thought in your mind that there could be a title change.
Yeah, and I do agree in some extents to just the really the open criticism. I still feel like. Seth Rollins kind of needs that defining match. You know, even against Dean Ambrose, he didn't get a real clean win.
Right. I can agree with that. I do think, but the element of the U.S. title being on the line, too, that's the interesting one, because Rollins really doesn't need that.
Right.
And I'm really not sure if they actually are going to build a statue of Seth Rollins put it in the office. Either.
Yeah, I mean, he has been over grandiose. So I don't know why he would suggest this.
Right. I mean, they can totally lie about that, I guess. It doesn't have to be taken literally. But I do worry about. I would love to see these two have a great match and have a definitive finish. But I do understand that if they're going to drag the story out, that maybe you have some sort of disputed finish. Or, God forbid, Sheamus cashes in.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, if Sheamus loses earlier in the night, maybe they pull off really what Seth Rollins did at WrestleMania, which is lose earlier in the night and then capture the title later.
Right. Well, I hope they keep Sheamus out of things. They can keep him out of things until after WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, it always seems like, especially since he is 100% a heel, that they don't normally cash in on the heel champions. It's, they usually screw over a babyface in some fashion. So I would expect Sheamus to hold on to that briefcase until somebody is in that spot, and it's definitely not Seth Rollins.
Right, no.
Despite the threat this past... No, it wasn't this past week, it was last week.
Last week.
But, yeah, I mean, they were just doing that for storyline purposes, honestly, just a talking point, nothing more.
It's a very interesting match because I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, the element of title versus title does add an element to the match of, what are they going to do with this? Are they going to go full-on ROH ripoff and have, one guy be forced to defend his title, defend both titles at different times, possibly twice in one night? They could go that. They could absolutely go that route, I guess. It would, especially with Rollins. Thinking he's pulled off this huge coup, and now, guess what? At Night of Champions, you have to defend your championships twice. You have to wrestle twice.
Yeah, there are a lot of options. I'm kind of with you on some type of a disputed finish. Is my general prediction?
Yeah, but it's very possible. Although third time since WrestleMania that a round title defense on pay-per-view has had, definitive finish, the first match with Ambrose and then Brock Lesnar last month, so it's not something you really want to make that big of, that much of what's the word I'm looking for?
Habit? Yeah, a habit. I mean, it's kind of what I started with, too, is that, Rollins hasn't had a credible win, really. I mean, if they have stories no matter what direction they go with.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely have a lot of stories they can do. I think that, it's John Cena. He lost to Kevin Owens. He can go down to the pedigree. He can lose to cling to Seth Rollins. The authority can get involved. Kane can return, although I really hope not. Any number of things can screw Cena out of a win here.
Right. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. But yeah, I think we both agree that some type of a disputed finish is pretty likely.
Yeah, I think so. I think that they're going to try to squeeze, 2 or 3 months out of this whole Cena-Rollins feud. So, yeah, and with it not actually being the final match on the show, they are more secure in doing so.
Right. I guess the one match to me that... it got set in a bit of a bad spot was the one just before the main event last night.
Oh, man. I really can't comment much on this one because it wasn't their fault, but I fell asleep during it and woke up after the match was over. I was tired. I was really tired. So.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things that they just got put in a bad spot. Everybody was ready for Lesnar at that point, and no matter who was in that spot, they were gonna get booed. And well, maybe not booed. They kind of got crickets, and then they got the "We want Brock" chant, which, you know, you usually don't want to do to something that you're just starting, really.
Yeah, no, no. They were put in a bad spot, and I can't you know, comment on the quality of the match because I didn't see it, and I totally forgot to go back and watch it again before I erase it from the DVR. So yeah, I really, you know, it obviously wasn't a good match because I think a good match would have, know, turn things around, but you know, they're in a tough spot. I hope no one, you know, well, Nikki Bella is a little bulletproof, so I hope they don't blame Sasha Banks for it.
Yeah, I would hope that they realize what the situation was there, but who knows?
Actually, the funny note is, it's been said that the reason that they always have the other girls surrounding the ring during, you know, these matches is so that the girls outside the ring can, this is from Meltzer, that the girls outside the ring can then get the crowd back, you know, into it when they start pounding on the mat. You know, it's, you know, simple psychology. But this time it just didn't work because it just made people chant, we want Lesnar in rhythm.
Yeah, again, just a bad spot to be in. Any match that would have been in that spot was going to get crapped on.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's the second Divas match of the night. It is more than they have, you know, they're still on a sustained push. And that's all you can ask for out of the WWE, honestly. You know, if the fans don't like it, then I think it'll bear out. But the match earlier in the evening with Becky Lynch and Tamina, I thought did fairly well with the crowd.
Yeah, I think it really did. I think that in a reversal of NXT, I think Becky Lynch plays the best in front of the WWE audience. As opposed to an NXT, obviously the other two, you know, Charlotte and Sasha, you know, play better to, you know, that 500 people college crowd and the, quote unquote, the, you know, smarter crowds that go to the NXT house shows.
You think that Becky Lynch's character is more broad than the other ones?
I think she shows more personality just when she goes to the ring. I think that, you know, that she has. She kind of, you know, figures it out better, you know, better ways to, you know, the way she walks, you know, the way she, her head banging, just annoying the crap out of me in NXT. But for some reason here, it works to, you know, to the rhythm of the music, and it's just, I think her whole presentation is, you know, better than the other two. I mean, it's to me like Emma worked in NXT,
right?
But then when she went, you know, to the big arenas where the rampway on the way to the ring was, you know, at least twice as long, if not longer, you know, she would do her dance, and then it would be like, now what do I do? I'm only halfway to the ring now. Do I keep doing my dance? You know, whereas I think that, you know, Becky has kind of figured out, you know, what she needs to do, you know, to keep, you know, her character strong. Maybe the other two, you know, Sasha and Charlotte, have not, and I have felt that, you know, I've actually felt for a while that Charlotte does lack in the charisma department. I mean,
right.
She gets by on being a great athlete and being Ric Flair's daughter, but she's actually pretty wood, you know, the way she, you know, you can watch the way she walks in the ring, her promos. She is actually, of the three, she's supposed to all, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you don't come up with, the nickname The Boss, like, I know that you've mentioned it as one of the more contemporary gimmicks.
Yeah, although that was very interesting to find out that on their appearance last week on Jericho's podcast, she brought up that the first time the crowd chanted Sasha's ratchet at her, she didn't know what that meant. So she's not as I guess she's not as up on the street lingo as I thought she was. It's kind of funny. She had to ask what somebody meant because she said that she actually thought that they were chanting that she was rat shit. And it was really bothering her. Am I that bad?
Okay, I did not listen to that podcast.
It was very good.
That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that gives me good reason. Yeah, if it is, because that's what Jeremy and I were kind of discussing, Enzo and Colin Cassidy, and he's like, I don't get the whole soft spelling, and I'm like, I don't either, but I'm old. I might not understand this stuff anymore.
It's all right, man. It's all right.
So, you know, when it was made mention that Boss was a very contemporary thing, I'm like, I ain't got no clue. Just tapping out here.
Oh, poor Kevin. Well, I mean, Sasha definitely.
But
Sasha definitely has more of. Once again, she has more of it than Charlotte has. I think I've been just our talk about NXT. I've said that I feel like Sasha's significantly better than Charlotte in every way. And last night may have been a small bump in the road, but I think overall, I think that Charlotte will. I mean, Sasha will. You know, she'll find herself, especially if she can. An issue for Sasha, I think, is she's playing sidekick to someone who's less talented than she is. So that gets you know. I mean, she's more important than, you know, Tamina is to the group, but she's still, you know,
second in command.
What?
Yeah, she's the second in command still.
She's the second in command, whereas with Paige, Charlotte, and Becky, I guess Paige is kind of the leader, but she's, you know, they're more equals together, whereas Dad is, you know,
a hierarchy.
The hierarchy thing, yeah. One's more of an ensemble, one's more, it has the established hierarchy.
Yeah.
So I think as, you know, they kind of drift away from this team thing and you know, Sasha gets to be more on her own and shows more of her personality and gets, you know, 100% of a 2-minute interview with Renee Young or JoJo, I think she'll really, you know, come through flying colors. More than Charlotte will, but maybe on a similar wavelength to Becky Lynch.
Yeah, she does have, even if I don't understand the Boss thing in and of itself, the character is just, you know, someone who's, I mean, I don't think it's anything new. The terminology might be new, and maybe some facets of it might be lost on me, but it's just a bitchy character, really.
Yeah, it's just a bitchy, I know, that girl who thinks that she's better than everyone else, who has a bad attitude, who looks down on others, you know.
Yeah,
that's what the character is.
It's a pretty basic character when you kind of throw that part of the equation out.
Right, yeah, it is very, you know, it is a pretty basic character, but, you know, she puts her modern spin on it, and she's, you know, really good, you know, great, you know, not just very, very good, you know, great in the role, especially, you know, on NXT. I mean, all that aside, you know, you put Charlotte and Sasha in the ring together, you know, put all the other kind of stuff aside, it's a better match than any two, you know, other women, almost an entire business can put on. Hopefully, they'll get that opportunity to have a long match on a WWE pay-per-view, you know, in the coming months.
Yeah. So, you know,
and
even though that they
question,
were
question.
Again,
I should add that getting back to SummerSlam, team elimination match, it is the teams are eliminated, not individual eliminations. That has been made clear. That at least on WWE.com,
oh,
clear that you know you eliminate, you pin one, they all go. Not you know there's not going to be you know boom 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 eliminations in 10 minutes.
Okay, well, that I think that's good news for the match. It might give it a little more rhythm than if they tried to have each, you know, Survivor Series style the matchup.
Yeah, that is much better for the match. And, you know, in a 4-hour show, I mean, they'll get time, but you need to do a proper, individual elimination Survivor Series style match, you need at least 25 minutes, and they're not getting that, so it is a good thing.
Right. I'm trying. Oh, well, they did have one returning character last night. Speaking of, you know, hype for SummerSlam, Lana has done her job and kept the feud alive with Rusev in the absence of one Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, they, for all the faults in the angle, when the music hit, people popped, they reacted well to it, so, that was a success in that way. I mean, the chemistry between Dolph and Lana still leaves a whole lot to be desired, and Rusev and Summer are better, but once again, in the end of the day, I do hope that, they do, that, at some point they have, Rusev and Lana, stop playing games with each other and realize that they're both horrible people who just belong together. like, making other people's lives miserable.
Yeah, Mr. Mays has made this suggestion before, but, I think it, people, at least I guess I'm leaning towards Lana staying with Dolph Ziggler despite the bad connection, but the one way to solve that problem is to just go ahead and turn her, go heel again.
Yeah, she's a natural heel. She's very awkward as a babyface. Plus, because they're still trying to play that she's Russian when she's not, that accent and the way she's, just the whole way she speaks just works so well as a heel, but as a baby face, it's like, kind of nails on chalkboard when she's trying to be nice with that accent and smiley, and it's just like, they should have just done something about that, like, but then again, if you're ever going to put, Lana and Rusev back together, you don't want to admit that, the accent was a put on. She's really from Florida, and all that. So I guess she's doing the best she can, but it's been a lot of bad material, and it's not natural for her. So this is the direction they're going. Again,
it was established, like you said, kind of from the start, and I feel that way about a lot of these angles. For all of the faults that they've had in a lot of these angles, they've built them up.
Yeah.
Like, the tag team build-up has been a bit clunky. But, I mean, it's been pretty clear for at least 3 or 4 weeks now that it was going to be a four-team match.
Yeah, they established that quickly, that there was a small, that there was a small threat that the Ascension would be involved in this match. Not teased, threat. But that went by. Thankfully, that went by the wayside. They should have a perfect, perfectly good match. There's a number of flyers in there. To keep things entertaining. You got Titus, Big E in there to just kind of throw the little guys around. Even Darren Young has shown a lot more during this tag title reign than he ever has before. So once again, they should have a really fun match, and I do hope, I mentioned it last week, I do hope that the New Day does get the tag titles back, I think that it is time for that. They have been so remarkably entertaining.
Yeah, it's been weird that they can only feature one real tag team every week, because I did think that the primetime players were being entertaining before they got to titles, but not so entertaining anymore. Because they're not ripping on other teams anymore, which really made them pretty funny.
Right now, they've pulled Titus from commentary for the last 2 weeks, which... well, last week I think they should have continued the role he was on there. I mean, obviously this week they wanted them all in the ring.
Right.
For what this match is going to be on this show, they've done a good job with it. It should be a fun match to, I don't know, open the show, but you know, to have on or early in the show, an early high energy match early on the card. It'll play its role well, and then I guess if during the course of their timing out the show, if a match they didn't promote a match for the pre-show, I guess that might be the one that ends up getting bumped to the pre-show if need be.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of time. You can pretty much guarantee that Rollins, Cena, and Undertaker, Lesnar is the last hour of that show. So everything else is on a 3-hour pay-per-view.
Right. Well, they might pad. They might put a buffer in between. Those two matches. But yeah, in the last hour or two of the show, they'll definitely get a lot of time. They'll get with entrances and post match. They'll both get in the range of 30 minutes probably. especially if you include the other elements.
Yeah, and I mean, another match that, regardless of any of the warts, and definitely one of them being the fact that they have met any number of times, Sheamus and Randy Orton even have, they've been on TV with an adversarial relationship for...
2010.
Huh?
2010, pretty much.
Yeah. So
Sheamus's first title win.
Right. Well, this is the first time that Sheamus was the heel in the situation.
Right. I don't think so. But whatever. Whatever. I don't want to think about things that happened in 2010 and 2011.
That's
my favorite period of wrestling history.
Yeah. Admittedly, I don't really feel like watching it again, but it is what it is. They put some oomph behind it, and I'm trying to think of the other match that they put some oomph behind. They're still trying to find some good uses for the old members of the Shield, Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, taking on Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper.
Yeah, I know that they didn't feel like they had the right third guy for the Wyatts, and they pulled the initial idea of Sting being in the match. I think, now granted, they never even hinted towards that on television, so only people who read that kind of stuff online even know that was even in the thought process. But I do think this buildup has been. It's missing something. They do tag matches on TV with pop stars on TV all the time. You do tag matches to build up to a singles match, and but here the big match is a tag match, so it's a little. And these guys have also, done huge six-man tags, in the Shield, which is why it's viewed of 2014. So it's like. It definitely misses something. It lacks something. It's just two of the three versus two of the three. You know what I mean?
Yeah. but again, they've built it up. It should be a fun match. I like everyone involved in the match. Luke Harper and Roman Reigns put on a hell of a match on Monday, in my opinion.
I really didn't. They really did. It was a very good matchup. At least the final 3 minutes, you know, were really good. They built to a good finish. I think that they maybe got in a little. Maybe they got a little too much time, and you know, Reigns spent a little too much time in a, you know, in a chin lock from Luke Harper. But you know, overall, you know, it was fine. You know what they did. I think they continued the story that Ambrose and Reigns were have been pushing that.
Oh no! Not right now. We cannot have a bad connection right now, because this is just silly. Okay, what were you saying there, sir? Before somebody got cut out.
Oh yeah, I was just saying that. I mean, the match did a good job telling the story that you know Reigns and Ambrose have been pushing that you know Bray Wyatt doesn't give a crap about Luke Harper at all, so he just you know, let him get beat and then just. You know, went in the ring and said his catchphrase without really having any concern for you know the loss of the match at all. So I think that was good, and I mean it should be a good match.
Right.
I just feel like as a you know as kind of the number three match at on SummerSlam, it's missing something.
Yeah, it's missing Seth Rollins and Eric Rowan.
Yeah, it is missing that, or just an extra guy on each side, because, you know, a six-man tag can be something, you know, it's simple math. Six is greater than four, you know? Instead, you just got this tag match that's just, you know, this seems like something we would see on Raw, and it might not even end up actually be the main event on Raw.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of what other matches that are on the card, because I'm doing this strictly from memory, to just prove that they've done a pretty decent job of building things up. Is there any other one, Chris? I'm blanking right now.
Oh, let's see. Well, Owens and Cesaro have a pretty good feud going.
And how dare I forget Cody Rhodes and the Cosmic King?
Oh man, that's just.
Oh.
No one needs to complain about these two fools being served up on a silver platter to an actor. They're not giving... There's no sacrifice here. These two guys are just... Oh, such geeks.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, it's different, but... different doesn't always mean good. And, really, Neville didn't get to defend himself at all. Like, he didn't get any mic time.
Oh, they don't believe I'm pretty sure that they don't believe he can talk. So, you know.
Right.
So, and you know, Amel's not gonna. I mean, that guy. I mean, he's. You know, he's in the middle of filming season 4 of a show. He's actually at you know, Chicago Comic Con this weekend on Rose Friday and Saturday before he flies to New York for SummerSlam. He actually, you know. Kind of moves heaven and earth to make that appearance work. So I have all the respect in the world for the guy. He's obviously, you know, a hard worker and someone who, you know, is very, you know, very respectful of his commitments and does everything he can to, do a lot. Because he was supposed to be there on Friday, but he, you know, had the Friday of the convention, but, you know, he obviously moved his schedule around so that he could. So that's a guy I have all the respect in the world for that. And I'm sure he's putting in. I mean, I know something was made of this weekend of him injuring himself in the gym, having a slight injury to his face. You know, doing an exercise. It was said that he did it, you know, while training for the match. But the sound of it, it sounds like just a regular part who's, you know, exercise routine that just went wrong.
Yikes.
Yeah, yeah. He did, like, I don't want to say it, something similar to the clean and jerk where you with one arm jerk the weight up over your head, he accidentally hit himself in the face.
Oh.
You do that kind of stuff. What's it called?
Yeah, well, a clean and jerk works. I mean, if he was using a kettlebell or something and it was flipping around a little bit and he was just being a little too lax, I could see it whacking him in the face.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty good, you know, some pretty good swelling, but nothing that, once again, nothing that's going to keep him out of SummerSlam or, you know, keep him from his any appearances he has scheduled or, you know. Or
it'll make him look tough.
I tell you, I was breaking the ropes with the guy. He seems like a pretty, you know, tough guy, pretty, you know, hardworking guy. I have no issues with him doing this at all. You know, he's going to take it seriously. He's
yep.
A lifelong fan. He's on his bucket list. Probably not paying him all that much.
Right. I'm sure he's getting some rate commensurate with what his role is going to be in this show. Which right. is special attraction.
Yeah, it's something that definitely, you know, it does add something to the show. Once again, you know, Rhodes and Barrett are just, they're absolute jokes. So, yeah, it's a good spot for Neville to be in.
Right.
So, yeah, I like it for what it is.
Oh, and you know what? There is one other match there that I was thinking of. When I started, when the tag match came up there.
Is it the one I brought up and then you brought this one up?
Yeah, it would be.
Owens versus Cesaro. Yes. I have liked this so far. I like their interaction with each other. I mean, Cesaro is growing by the week. It's really cool that, you know, this whole Cesaro section thing has started completely organically. With some guy in San Jose, and now every week someone takes it upon themselves to print out thousands of signs for Cesaro and declare themselves the Cesaro section.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, this was something that he had before when he was getting over with the Cesaro swing. But they, for whatever reason, decided to kill it post Andre the Giant Battle Royal winner at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that was a mistake, but he's grown since then, and this time it's not about a move. It is him. People are loving him, and I think that that's... Maybe I'm going a little over-exaggerating, going a little too far at this stage, but I might go as far as to say that right now, Cesaro is a dark horse for me to win the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit early to call that, but hey, yeah. I don't feel like if you're a betting man that's a bad bet either.
I mean, because when you look at what WrestleMania is likely going to be, you know, you've got Undertaker's last match, very likely, you know, The Rock in a match, you know, whatever they're going to have Brock Lesnar do, I guess, at the end of the day, either Undertaker or The Rock are the only two people that you could really put Lesnar against at WrestleMania in that stadium and have it be gigantic. So, like, I would say that maybe one of those two matches is going to happen. So, if you've got, like, two, you know, really huge attraction matches, you know, headlining WrestleMania, you can have a world championship match that's, you know, not really in a position to sell the show, but it's in a position to steal the show.
Right. I agree. So it'll be interesting because, well, I mean, Owens is, he got his kind of big push to start, and
his stock is dropping. I didn't really notice this, but, you know, Meltzer pointed out that when they were panning the crowd they stayed for a really long time on a sign that read, "Eat Owens, eat." Yeah, so you can tell there is that contingent within WWE that, you know, within the WWE management that absolutely see, you know, sees his weight as a detriment. And I gotta say, wait, well, I'm not, you know, as against it, as against him being overweight. I don't know if it's just me, but I do feel like he has gained weight since May.
Ah. Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that or noticed that.
I don't know that I've paid attention, honestly, but it's still one of those things that, to me, he lost weight before coming in from ROH. I don't know if he's back to ROH weight. But Samoa Joe was looking pretty out of shape, honestly, at his end of TNA. He looks in a lot better shape, and he looks quite a bit trimmer, in my opinion.
He absolutely does, yeah. Joe is doing everything, seems to be doing everything he can to stay, you know, get himself in the shape that they like. I mean, it's, you know, you can argue you're the right or the wrong of it, you know, but WWE is a company run by two bodybuilding aficionados. It's just the way it is.
But, and this is the part that at least gets me about Owens, is that, I mean, you brought him up and gave him this huge push, and then you're going to do this? Like, didn't you know what you were getting when you brought him up? Like, why not leave him in NXT longer if you felt like he needed to work on that? I mean, he had 3 really long matches with John Cena and did not run out of gas.
No. Absolutely, he's not. You know, it does not hinder his performance. It's pretty obviously it's a cosmetic issue. And yeah, I do think that, you know, I hope that, you know, Kevin Owens doesn't become like a victim in a battle between Triple H and Vince. Because, like, you know, Triple H is pretty obviously, you know, for Owens. He's, you know, a pet project of his, and then Vince is going to be, you know, skeptical at best, you know, kind of skeptical of him at best, and he's going to be looking for any reason to, you know, maybe prove Triple H wrong. And, you know, that's going to be a rough way to run this company if they're going to be at odds with each other.
Right. And I mean, I guess I was of the contingent that Owens could get in better shape.
Oh yeah, 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 absolutely can. But he's also new. It's what, you know, Miz brought up to ZZ. You know, this life is hard. You're getting out of buildings at, you know, close to midnight. You know, what's open in, you know, South Dakota or, you know, Montana or wherever, you know.
I know that they say that, but for the most part, at least the live shows are not in any small cities for the most part.
Right. Or but in any city in America, you know.
Yeah.
What's open after 11 o'clock at night, you know?
Not a whole lot.
Right. So maybe Owens is having a hard time adjusting to that because he kind of got himself in better shape when he was basically, you know, living out of the Performance Center and Full Sail University, which are 10 minutes away from each other, and then, you know, they would do that before the NXT went on house shows. It's that loop around Florida where everything's just not more than a few hours apart, so you're, you know, back home, you know, at, you know, in decent time. So the guy's, you know, battled with his weight, you know, his whole life. So I think he deserves some leeway. I don't think that they should be taking his push away. I mean, that whole thing of, you know, embarrassing people or, you know, giving them hard times on TV has always, you know, rubbed me the wrong way. I'm like, why are you punishing the audience? Punish them then. Take them off TV then.
Leave us out of this mess, please, and thank you.
But it's not like, you know, feuding with Cesaro is this this great punishment. I mean, he's still in a, he's still in a good spot. I mean,
you're right.
He's still featured. So
yeah, he's still getting as much or more mic time than a lot of people on the roster.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe some. They definitely have their issues with why they didn't after have him win the Cena feud and and stay in the main event mix. But he's still in he's still in solid company, and I gotta be honest, I think there is more. There is more of a future in investing in some.
Gotcha. Okie dokie. Well, I mean, we have gone extra long here, but I felt like we got through all of the WrestleMania. There I go. That's how big it was. I'm calling it WrestleMania. SummerSlam preview. So, hey, let it go a little extra long this week. So, sippy time beer for the show. Stone Fort from my own local brewery, Seventh Son, or at least one of them. It's quite a tasty beverage. And one of their basics, and there's the nothing wrong with the word basic when it comes out that good. Yeah, at Frango11, at Chris Calamita, at Stunt Granny. Floor is yours if you want to say something special before we're out.
Later.